Hello and welcome to the Unmissables podcast. I've started
jauntily. Yeah, very happy.
Like a DJ. Those two voices are the voices, first of all, I think just about you heard Kay Ribeiro.
Hello.
And then second of all, definitely, you heard Stephanie Celan.
It was indeed me.
This is the podcast in which we trawl through the week's popular culture, television mainly. But this week, as befits the start of the summer season, I'm calling it, we're doing a film, aren't we?
A film. We've been to the cinema.
We've been to the cinema together. And we went to see The Ocean's 8, which is what I believe they're calling, I keep saying that, sorry, what I believe they are calling a female reboot.
Yeah.
This is the thing that happened. They did it with Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
They did women taking over the main roles of the 1984 classic fantasy comedy sci-fi venture.
Yeah.
This time they've got women taking over the roles of a heist, as indeed was performed by the all-star cast in Ocean's 11, 12 and 13.
You better watch out. We might reboot this and have a female taking over you.
Go for it.
Yeah.
GFI.
Yeah, female Boyd.
Yeah.
Do it. We're also reviewing TV. Atlanta Season 2, otherwise known as, in fact officially known as, Robin Season. I will explain why later. This is from the award-winning Donald Glover. He'd created it. Otherwise known as Childish Gambino. I know you're a big fan of his Childish Gambino music, Kay. Is that you singing a Childish Gambino song?
No, it's me. Yes. Everybody loves him now because he's done that song, This Is America, and he dances. Yeah. So now everyone's pretended they've known Childish Gambino for like 500 years.
Oh, okay.
But they have, though. I mean, I'm one of those people. Like, Childish Gambino, I love him. I didn't actually know that Childish Gambino was Donald Glover for ages.
Brilliant.
Just saying. That's a good, honesty, the only one.
Honesty, Steph. Always the best policy.
Always the best policy.
And finally, we have watched, and we shall be reviewing Mortimer and Whitehouse, as in Bob Mortimer and Paul Whitehouse, Gone Fishing.
Yes, really.
Yes, really. Which is a six-part documentary series in which we watch Bob Mortimer and Paul Whitehouse fishing.
You don't think you need that
no,
in your life?
Don't say that. No spoilers, Kay. No spoilers. It sounds like you're going to spoil
you
it. No.
I forgot the format.
FFS. Before all of that, though, let's begin, as we are wont to do, with a discussion of what we've all been watching, listening to, reading, etc. this week. Kay!
Oh
my God,
hold on.
The format.
I feel like I've won the lottery.
It's a format break.
Okay.
Yes.
Regular listeners will know that this is usually called Steph's Netflix appreciation section.
Listen, you've been usurped. We're mixing this shit up. This is what's happening. Okay.
It's a mix-up.
Mine a few bits and bobs. It's mainly a catch-up.
Okie dokie.
First thing I wanted to talk to you guys about was Soccer Aid. Now, did either of you watch it?
I wasn't expecting you to say that.
I know, but we're getting into football season, as you know. There's a small tournament going on. What is that?
Football season,
The World Cup, I think it goes by the name of.
And starts this Thursday.
I wanted to
find
out.
Is it the 14th?
Yes, Thursday. Day after tomorrow, if you're listening to this on Tuesday when the podcast comes out. Sorry, Kay.
No?
Interrupted already.
No. Now, did any of you watch it? And particularly Blake Harrison's celebration of his penalty.
I watched the first half and then had to go to a party.
It's so good. Watch it. Yeah, his reaction to it was amazing. And then he was obviously trending on Twitter, like Neil scoring the winning goal.
What did he do?
What, do you want me to act it out now?
Yeah.
Really defiant, arms out.
Right, okay. That was the greatest thing he'd ever done.
Yeah. It was the greatest thing he's ever done.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know what? One of the commentators were talking about Robbie, because as you know, Robbie set this whole Soccer Aid thing up in aid of UNICEF. And he said that the next day, Robbie was going to make a really big announcement. So I was really geared up, going to my sister very confidently. It's going to be that he's the X Factor judge. Because, you know, we've heard rumours that he's going to be the new judge replacing Lee Walsh.
This is X Factor rumour judge time, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. It's when people start getting all whipped up. However, when I looked at Twitter the next day, it wasn't that. It's that he's going to be singing at the opening ceremony of the World Cup in Russia.
No.
Yeah.
He's not worth
he
him.
Is.
I find
fair,
that disappointing.
Oh,
I thought
come
it was
on. Be... To be fair, that's huge for him. That's huge for
that's
him.
That's huge for him.
Yeah, and
that's
it is,
huge
and
for
it is,
him.
It's interesting slash weird.
Why is that? That is
yeah,
so
right. It's weird,
odd.
Isn't it?
It is interesting.
Because
it is very interesting.
He is one of the few, I guess, globally famous people. He's like really, really famous
in
Europe and Russia. Clearly, he's a big star in Russia.
What about David Hasselhoff?
That is, again, a good point.
I mean, maybe he's also performing, hasn't revealed it.
Oh, yeah, God.
The secrets.
I can't forgive Robbie Williams for that New Year's Eve. So, do you remember when he did New Year's Eve?
Yes.
And he kept
the
calling.
Hand whitewash.
Oh, my God. Oh. And he kept hand-wash calling. But he kept calling Melvin Marvin all night. It was Melvin O'Doom of our wonderful Kiss radio. Yeah. He kept calling him Marvin. And he was even like, going, Marvin, Marvin. I was like, oh, this is excruciating.
Was the Anti Backer joke?
I don't know.
Because he said it was.
I think
he
said it was. I think he made more of it. I think it was a joke in the sense that, yeah, it was a joke. But it was.
It was a little excruciating. It was a brave joke. Anyway, I just wanted to talk about that, finding everyone's feelings about that. And if we do think he's going to be the X Factor judge or not.
That's the other thing I was going to say. Just because his immediate news is that he's performing at the World Cup, it doesn't mean he's not going to be the X Factor judge. I definitely think Simon's asked him to do it, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
I think he'd be good on it.
I didn't even know. I mean, they can have to start auditions pretty soon, but I don't even know if he's decided yet. Like, these things go down to the wire.
Yeah.
I think he's yes for the X Factor judge, and I think no for the World Cup. That's what I think.
No, but he's definitely doing the World
no,
Cup.
No, I know, but I don't want him. What I mean is I don't want him to.
You're flying in the face of fact.
The one thing I have... Oh my God, John Dunn's even cackling. The one thing I have confirmed.
No, I know. I know it's come out. I just don't want him to do it.
This kind of sums up your stubbornness in a kind of brilliant way.
What do you mean?
BTC. Behind the curtain.
Right, okay, I'm going to move on from that.
Yeah.
So, confirmed, he is doing the World
definitely
Cup.
Definitely doing the World Cup. Yeah. Except that... Well, Steph would rather he did and not did. I don't know, who knows? Who can mix that up? But they've definitely announced that Louis Walsh isn't doing.
Yes,
that was a
they have
pressure.
At the weekend.
Oh, he isn't. And Sharon... is he finally not doing it?
No, yes. Yeah, that was a proper official
Louis
press
Walsh
release.
Is not doing it. And Sharon's
well, he should
and,
still do it.
But there's a weird. I love Louis. I will miss Louis. But there's a. That. I mean, this is going to take.
Sharon's only doing the live shows.
And which is weird, isn't
that's
it?
That's quite odd.
Like, why? Why? She's only doing the live shows. She's not doing the auditions. It's like, that's such a contractual obligation, isn't it? They've clearly gone, we want to refresh the whole panel. We're going to get rid of Sharon. She's gone, like, in my opinion, I don't know. I have no facts. I'm just
it's
making
conjecture,
this up.
Everyone. Conjecture. Lawyers.
She's gone, you effort, you're not getting rid of me. I've signed a massive contract for however many years. And in order to not, like, break that contract. Mm. They've said, all right, you'll do the live shows, but it just doesn't make any sense.
I just think this is Simon's idea of refreshing it.
Sure, but you know.
But it's not exciting enough. That's what I need to say. Simon,
shows.
If you're listening, and I know you listen to the podcast, it's not exciting enough. Pull your finger out.
We don't know who they're getting to replace Lou Walsh. It could be, if it's Robbie Williams, you'd be pleased, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's exciting, but it's not an exciting.
Well, as I've said, as I said.
Format change, is it? But anyway. Right, moving on. I've been doing a bit of reading.
Oh, good.
We like it when you're highbrow. Yeah, we like it when you recommend a tome.
And, well, it's an old one. So, I'm obsessed with the Durrells.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Well, I've got into the Corfu trilogy by Gerald Durrell because, you know, he wrote those three books. My Family and Other Animals, Birds, Beasts and Relatives and The Garden of the Gods.
And they're all in one book.
Oh, yeah. It's a fat tome and it's so good because Boyd and I particularly like the Durrells. And I thought, oh, I wonder if, you know, sometimes they're not always faithful to the book and sometimes the adaptation's perhaps better than the book. But have you ever read My Family and Other Animals, Boyd?
I believe I read them when I was very young, so I don't remember
just a few
well.
Years ago.
Yeah.
And they are just, it's the books are even funnier than the TV series, and I find the TV series very, like, witty. The characters are just as they appear on screen. The only thing I've noticed that is different is that Larry, played by Josh O'Connor in the TV series, is blonde.
Oh, wow. Shocker. Mm. Wow. What a shocker.
Creative license taken. Yeah. Steph, is that sarcasm?
So, no. Yeah. No, it wasn't.
Yes, it
you
is.
Know what I think about the Durrells? It's a production company going on holiday for a little bit of time. You know, I think it's a jolly up.
That's
I've told
one of
you.
Steph's ludicrous
I've told you it's a jolly up. Is it ITV?
Yes.
Yeah.
ITV jolly up. Classic.
Talking of Josh O'Connor, you met him, didn't you, yes. Kay? Is that what you're about to say? Are you holding
literal,
that back? Don't hold back.
I was literally just about to say. Well,
don't
actually, funny
back.
You say that, Steph, because I did speak to Josh O'Connor recently.
When did you speak to him? On the telephone?
No, in person.
Oh.
Because I went to Brussels.
Did you now?
On Thursday last week, because very excitingly, the BBC are doing an adaptation of Les Mis, or Les Miserables to you.
Oh, yep. Yes. Very exciting.
It's going to be a six-parter.
Is there any singing in it?
No, which is such a blessed relief, because I'm not a fan
God.
Of musicals.
Oh, for God's sake.
I hate musicals.
Same.
Why sing it when you can just say it?
Yeah, but they say it and
no,
then they sing
say,
it as well.
Don't sing.
No, but they say it and then they sing something as well.
So why
no,
do they
Les
need
Mis,
to sing it?
They just
sing
totally
all of
sung.
It.
You're wrong. Les Mis is one of those ones that's all sung, isn't it? Really
oh,
badly,
yeah.
Annoyingly.
It is. But in the
like
film,
me.
Is it all
the film,
sung?
It's all sung, pretty much. I think, unless I'm trying to think of a bit... No, it's
the
I think it
musical.
Sticks to the
it
formula.
It's all sung and it is irritating. But I'm happy to say Andrew Davis' adaptation... is all spoken, and it's got a really great cast. Olivia Colman's in it. Our friend Dominic West. I say that we've never.
Who does it? Does he play Jean Valjean?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
From The Affair, and he's in it. Josh O'Connor plays Marius. Mm. Who else? They got Erin Kellyman. Is it Eponine? Is that he said?
Ooh,
was she
Eponine.
The one in Solo?
Oh, maybe. I don't know. What's her name?
Yeah, the curly. Erin Kellyman.
Oh,
do you know her?
Okay, no.
and many others, Lily Collins. And it was fantastic to speak to them. And I'm really excited about it because, as we know, Andrew Davis is incredible. He did War and Peace and Pride and Prejudice.
When is it going to be on? Is it a Christmas thing?
I think it's going to be the new year. That's all I can say. I've signed stuff now. I can't say anymore.
I don't know.
What?
Patience.
That's ages away. We haven't even had summer yet.
Yeah, but they're filming it now. That's why I was going to watch them film.
Yeah,
see, that's in the Brussels.
Okay, fine.
It's what is known as a set visit.
Yeah,
I believe.
Right, I saw horses and carts.
Did you?
I saw people in period dress. It was very exciting.
Perfect.
Mm. Oh, thanks, Boyd.
Oh.
Anyway, that's me done.
Is that it? Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's my bit of bonging.
That was very much.
Oh yeah, we didn't even
that
bong you at all.
Me style name dropping.
Yeah, it was. Yes.
Listen, I was just hanging out with Dominic. What moment?
Whole host of names tumbling down.
Yeah.
Josh O'Connor was my favourite. Just got to say.
Yeah, he's great, as in of God's Own Country fame.
Yeah, and the Durrells.
The Durrells. Beat that, Celan.
What are you doing? I didn't know whether you were going to do a complete format change and you were going to go next, and then
no,
going to go.
That would be crazy.
No,
okay,
no.
Fine.
Let's not go. Mad.
If you've got 15 to 20 minutes spare every day, you can learn a lot by watching Netflix new series Explained.
Ooh.
Heard of this?
No.
I've heard of it, yeah.
Do you know anything
Please
about
do explain.
Do you know anything about cryptocurrency?
No, but I need to. Oh, God, I try and understand it
15 to 20
regularly.
Minutes. Do you know anything about monogamy?
Yeah, I know a lot about that.
15 to 20 minutes. Basically, Netflix got this
How
fantastic...
How long does it take to explain monogamy?
Huh?
How does it take that long to explain monogamy?
Don't diddle someone else. The history of these things.
There's two very big contrasts. Like, cryptocurrency, yeah. Yeah. Like, that takes a long time. Monogamy,
no.
Like one sentence.
Go on, then. What's monogamy? Go on, explain it.
Well, having a relationship with one person for the whole of your
life. That's what you think.
Oh.
But, yeah.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah, well, you have to watch it. 15 to 20 minutes.
What? No, that is it, Steph.
No. There's a lot more
Clearly,
to it
I've
than
got
that.
It, got it wrong all
yeah,
these
years. Yeah, you've got it all along. Got it all wrong.
That's where we're going wrong.
Basically, it attempts to address some questions about modern life in these short episodes, and it's absolutely brilliant. There's an episode on K-pop, which is the phenomenon of Korean pop.
Yes.
Yeah. It's very good. It's absolutely brilliant.
Okay. I mean... Kay. Just that, for example, Korean pop, K-pop. I mean, is the explanation just what K-pop stands for? Because otherwise, Korean pop, it's not hard to understand, is it? I'm not attacking you. I'm just questioning.
I feel that you both need to watch a couple of these episodes and then you'll realise how much you've learned from them. Okay?
Right. I'm into it. I'm into learning.
Have you all finished
from
The
Netflix.
Staircase?
Yeah.
Also
no.
on Netflix?
No.
Have I'm you? Going to the screening on, you mentioned last week, didn't you?
What,
Did you
BAFTA?
Are you taking me to that screening, the BAFTA screening?
I believe you're not available. I believe you're away. That's what
yeah,
you told me.
Oh, we I was. I remember
yeah,
we've
don't
had this
blame
argument
me.
Already.
I
am outraged
away.
As a default
yes.
mode, and then you realised.
Yeah, I remember.
Yes. So
go.
I'm kind of slightly holding back so that I can go to the screening, and I'm not sure which episodes they're going to show, and then there's going to be a Q&A afterwards with the director, the French director. Excited.
Xavier Jean Lestrade.
There
we
you
did
go.
Mention it last week because yes. one of our pogs suggested we go out
yes,
on an outing.
Right.
Nira
yes.
suggested,
and the,
yeah.
the pog, I've now following up the pogs.
Well,
but
we
not
can't.
With us.
Let's talk about that next week because yeah. I finished The Staircase.
Cool.
The three new episodes are absolutely thrilling.
Oh, like,
do you think you did it?
Brilliant. I tell you what, I flip-flopped around all the. After
Classic
I listened
flip-flop.
To Reasonable Doubt, which is the podcast, I thought, this man is a killer. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Then
Convicted
by episode 8 of Staircase, I was like, this man has been wrongly accused.
Reverse ferret.
Then by the end, I can't tell you. Anyway, I flip-flop around a lot. I flip-flop around a lot. And I've caught up on Patrick Melrose. So this is just a bit of me telling you I've caught up on things, which is still on Sky. I found it very distressing, though. I didn't watch the last one yesterday, so don't tell me what happens.
So when you say you've caught up, you haven't caught up with the rest of the world because the last one was on this weekend.
Yeah, but I hadn't watched any of it, apart from that first one we had to watch.
Okay.
And also, do you know we watched... So that's on Sky, so absolutely brilliant. Now, Goliath. Do you remember we reviewed the first episode?
Yes.
And
Goliath?
I said...
We reviewed it a couple of weeks ago.
Billy Bob Thornton on the Amazon Prime.
Route 1, yeah.
But you know I said... it was really up my street and I was going to go back and watch.
Not as good as Bosch.
I'm just going to endorse. I went back and I've watched the first season and it's absolutely brilliant. I know there's a really big catch up, so it kind of is a bit of a spoiler if you start watching season 2, but please do go and watch Goliath because
really?
It is brilliant.
Mm.
It's
brilliant.
Really, really, really good.
I might give it a twirl.
Then two more things I want to mention. I know this is a bit of a rando, but I watched
this is an extended Bruce Willis film
called Death Wish, which was directed by Eli Roth. No, this is Eli Roth. This is a warning. I've started a new section in my thing, which is called D-Recommendations, Steph's D-Recommendations. Don't watch it. I'm going to tell you what happens. Basically, I'm not going to tell you the...
Death Wish. Yeah, the remake of Death Wish. The Charles Bronson classic.
Oh, is it a film already?
It's a remake. Yeah, it was a remake. So, yeah. The original Death Wish.
Right.
Death Wish is a very, very famous 70s kind of exploitation, ultra-violent film. Charles Bronson as the... taking revenge.
Oh God, sounds well cheery.
And it's directed by Michael Winner. It's pretty much the only good film that Michael Winner ever made became like that film critic, restaurant critic rather. And now this is the remake.
Have you
last
seen
year.
The remake?
I've not seen it.
Don't watch it.
It looks terrible. Yeah, is it terrible?
Oh my God, it's honestly How one of the most stars? Terrible films I've ever seen, and it really upsets me that Bruce Willis is in it.
Yeah.
Because if Bruce Willis plays the main guy, I'm not going to give anything away. He's a surgeon, and his wife and daughter are burglarized, and some nasty things happen, and then he goes on a revenge spree.
Yeah. I hate burglarized.
Oh yeah, terrible.
Why don't we say burgled? No, I'm not saying it about you. Just
I said burglarized. So
as a general thing, we all start saying burglarized.
What robbed?
It's not what possessed you to
Netflix.
Watch that? Of course. What you said about 10 minutes ago. Is there anything on Netflix you haven't watched?
No. No.
However,
my final thing I'm going to recommend that you watch is get it on catch up.
We've got to get the sponsor by Netflix.
No, this is get it on catch up, BBC. The Antiques Roadshow did a suffragette special and it's absolutely fantastic. You must watch it. It was on this Sunday. If you didn't catch it, it is still on catch up. It's got lots of fabulous women who did loads of firsts, including a 91-year-old woman who twice held the record for swimming the channel. And the first time she was on the channel, it took her 12 hours. Yes, it's absolutely brilliant. Please do watch it on catch up. Even if you don't watch any other Antiques Roadshows, it's really, really well worth watching it.
Okay.
And realising, wow, it's taken us 100 years to get to this point, and we're, you know, wonderful.
Did you go on the march?
I didn't know. I was doing other things, which I'll talk about later.
She's watching Netflix.
Yeah.
Yeah, clearly. Can't go on any march.
I mean, there's more things I could talk about, but you know what? I won't. I won't.
We've got to save some for next week.
Yeah.
Okay, no. Live edit.
No, it's fine.
Live editorial meeting. Yeah. I mean, you could do more. I don't mind.
No, I've finished.
Okay.
Are they all on Netflix? If you feel like something, you've got a burning urge.
That was on BBC.
I was going to mention very quickly something. You know the Sense8? You know Sense8?
Oh, yeah. Sense8. The confusing thing. I was away.
Steph was off. Charles Gant, our esteemed film editor. Yeah.
Classic episode.
I always outrageous.
No, because Charles Gant.
Okay,
hold on.
Classic episode when I wasn't here and I was replaced by an actual proper film critic. Is that what you're saying to me?
Not because of that. I'm just saying it happened to be classic. Just anything with Charles.
Things have taken a turn for the worst.
To get shot anyway.
Okey-doke.
The finale, the long-awaited for fans finale of Sense8 is on the Netflix now. And by the way,
it's coming out.
It's on the Netflix, and it's 2.5 bloody hours. This epic final episode of this show.
2.5 hours.
Yeah, it's a lot.
That's ridiculous.
Longer than
it's
a film.
It's taking it too far. It's a massive. It's a Wachowski film, is what it is. Because you know,
Is that Wachowski?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sisters.
Sisters. Oh, yes. Sorry, they are sisters.
But I really enjoyed it. But the interesting thing about it is that the interesting thing about the finale is this show is famous for. I don't remember in the one we reviewed whether was there an orgy in the one we reviewed.
No, I don't.
Okay, it's famous for its sex scenes and its orgy scenes. Because Sense8, if you don't know, it's about this 8 people around the world in completely different, unconnected, but they all have this. They have this extrasensory connection.
Ooh.
This supernatural connection. They all can all effectively be together, and no matter what they're all doing separately around the world.
What?
And so the
like
kind
twins.
Of the idea that they're all going to have sex together is one of the ways that they dramatize this. Like all of them being
8 people having sex together at the same time. I mean, that is ridiculous.
Well, it's messy, is what it is.
Well,
why would they want to? Why would they want to do that? Like a big orgy.
If you say so.
Like hold on, like a big orgy, which is like defying all geography.
Yes.
Okay.
It's happened throughout the series. There's been 2 or 3 famous...
So what, they get together in the evenings?
Or do you see? Yeah. Not necessarily in the evening. Sometimes it can be in the day.
You know how I feel about daytime stuff like that.
Swimming pools?
No.
I think, listen.
No.
Anyway, spoiler alert. I don't think it's a big spoiler, but all I'd say is that you're kind of waiting for this thing to happen in the 2.5 hour thing, which is it's a kind of fantasy adventure, and there's some brilliant action scenes. The Wachowskis always do brilliant action, and they're still doing brilliant action still, but it does end with said scene of adult activity among a lot of people, and it is quite extraordinary, is all I'll say.
Ooh.
Yeah. Sense8 on Netflix now.
There's literally nothing to say. Silenced us.
Yeah. It's the opposite of monogamy.
Yeah.
Monogamy episode.
I see what you've done. You brought it all around.
Very much the opposite of that. Yeah. Whatever the word is.
Yeah.
Polyamory. Could be. That could be the word.
Polyamorous.
More importantly, this very morning, I went to see Hereditary, which is out in cinemas this Friday, I believe.
Is that meant to be the scariest film of the year?
The scariest film of the year. It's on the post, it says things like, this is the new Exorcist, this is the new The Shining.
Is it?
This is the new Rosemary's Baby.
Ooh.
Three films of which it's clearly influenced by. It stars, I won't do our full thing, because obviously time's of the essence, and we've got three in-depth things to review, and Kay is going to wrap me on the knuckles.
Well, we've probably got some tweets as well.
And we've definitely got some tweets. But all I would say is, it's a weird film, because it's written and directed by this first timer called Ari Aster. And
Ari Aster.
Yeah,
because you said it like he was an artist and it was like his one name.
No,
Ari Aster.
Ari Aster, yeah.
Like Prince.
Yeah.
No.
Already
Ari
we spent too much time talking about that.
We have.
Okay.
Kay's going to kill us. Enough about his name.
No, seriously, was it Ari or no? Carry on.
So if people went to phone and they're like, oh, should we invite Ari along?
Yeah.
Got it.
Definitely.
It's like Steph.
Yeah.
It's got a brilliant cast. Toni Collette.
Toni Collette.
Yeah, she's brilliant. She plays the kind of mother of a family. Her husband's Gabriel Byrne, also brilliant. Two kids, Alex Wolf, Millie Shapiro, I think, are newcomers. Her mum, it all begins with the funeral of her mother. And basically, they've had some kind of incredibly dysfunctional relationship, her and her mother. And she's not really kind of that sad that her mother's passed away. And then, I don't want to give anything else away, really. All I'd say is that this event, the death of her mother, precipitates a huge amount of trauma and violence and disturbing supernatural activity involving all kinds of very dark and disturbing stuff. And so it all kicks off, basically. And it's one of those films where it's one of these, there's a kind of new breed of horror film in a way. You've never seen The Witch, the Babadook a little bit, you know.
Right.
It Follows. Have you heard of that film?
Babadook always sounds like it's going to be fun, though, but it's not.
Well, Babadook is probably more fun than this. Actually, that's true. But these are kind of almost like art house horrors in a way.
Okay.
Whereby it takes quite a long time to establish the mood. It's quite a slow build, a slow burn. This film, particularly. And so it takes its sweet time to establish the characters and that incredible sense of dread right from the start. There's incredible
sense of
dread.
Is it very scary?
I'm already feeling tense now.
Yeah, it's tense and it's intense and totally the dread is done brilliantly. It's different. It's almost like not so much scary as horrible. Really horrible at various key moments.
Okay, so should we watch this?
So the warning is, if you can't take, if you're not a fan of like John Dan. Doesn't look like a horror film.
Oh, John, I didn't know this about you. Bit of like a Freddy cat.
Very much a Freddy cat.
Not for
Kay,
me.
No, definitely. I mean,
I could take it, Boyd.
I would bar Kay from watching this film because it's going to ruin her life. I think you can take it.
I can take it, Boyd.
I think you're going to find a way of watching it, if you know what I'm saying.
Going to the cinema and saying, please, can I watch Hereditary? I'll have one ticket.
I'll be absolutely thrilled if you do.
Yeah, I will.
And it's really difficult. What I'll say is, like, some people are building up as being the greatest, you know, one of the best horror films for years and years and years. I was slightly disappointed from that point of view because I think, for me, the end slightly marred it. What happens towards the end? I will say this, they kind of explain what's going on. Now, I have a big thing about, so my quick thing about horror films is...
Okie dokie.
That, I've already been going on too long, sorry, Kay.
But let me quickly say this.
Listen,
I prefer, when you're watching a horror film, that the experience is enough and you don't need necessarily... So if there's a supernatural thing going on, you don't need the explanation of it. Do you know what I mean? Like, what's the origin of this thing that you're watching? I don't need that.
Scare me or don't scare me.
And I thought...
You haven't got time for that.
I thought the brilliant thing... I was hoping that this film is 2 hours. I thought it's not going to bother with the big, long explanation of what
it
kind of does. And... But apart from that, there's some incredibly terrifying, intense moments. I mean, people oh, were. God.
None of what you're saying excites me.
Were people being sick?
Cinema full of critics. No, it was all full of critics, but there was gasping and there was. You could feel the tension. So, from that point of view, it's a brilliant. It's, in many ways, it's a brilliant piece of filmmaking.
So, where does it rank with your recent most favourite horror film, The Get Out?
Mm. Good question.
Get Out, you mean? Sorry.
I was doing your.
That's a
work.
Very good question.
Yeah, I
it's
know.
It's definitely. I much prefer Get Out. Yeah.
Fine.
And, you, and in fact, I'm so glad you mentioned that because I was thinking, oh, you know, what is a horror film that I prefer? Like Get Out is, I think, even much better film. No, a better film, by which I would watch repeatedly, was I never watch this again. I'm never ever going to watch this again.
Oh,
it's
God.
Almost too distressing for oh. words.
You looked traumatised when you came back.
Oh, thank yeah. I think I was semi-traumatised, yeah. So on the one, you're like, it can't be, it's not, it's a kind of, in many ways, brilliant because it did traumatise me and a lot of people in that screening room, definitely. On the other hand, I think the brilliant things are slightly marred by the thoughts. Anyway, I've said enough. Hereditary, go and see it for yourself if you can take it. And I'll tell you one thing, Toni Collette must get an Academy Award nomination because she is phenomenal.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Absolutely phenomenal.
I'm surprised she hasn't won one already.
And the one final thing I was going to say, and you mentioned it already, so I don't need to go on about it much longer, Katie. I've only done two things.
Listen,
one of them
all
was long.
I'd say is we've got to look into the definition
Apologia.
Of final. Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes, you know. In
it's
these,
a final final.
In these summer days, in these summer days, you have to do the first bit.
Yep. Penultimate, now meet. Final.
Do you know what is a scary film? No, just as a. Just, do you know what? And everyone hates this film apart from me, Stir of Echoes. That really frightened me, that film, the Kevin Bacon film, where the little boy's like, the white feathers.
Is this a film that's just arrived on Netflix by any chance?
No, it's really old, okay. But it is good.
Yeah, I like that film, yeah.
I tell you what's terrifying, the prospect of this podcast never ending. Come on.
What's your final thing, Boyd?
Well, you mentioned it, the catch up with Patrick Melrose, and I wanted to say that the final episode is an absolutely incredible. Triumph, which went out on Sunday.
Do you think he's going to get all the awards for it?
I hope everyone should get all
the
awards. Everyone should get all the awards. He is incredible. The adaptation, if Kate's nodding, wants me to move on, but the adaptation by David Nichols of One Day Fame is so clever. The way he distills, he takes a little bit of the fourth book and puts it into the fifth episode. The way he captures the essence of it, because it's so hard to get right. The fact that in the end, Patrick Melrose finds some redemption and some. Like he finds a way through his trauma.
That's good to know.
Yeah, his childhood trauma. But it's so subtly done. And the way the last few minutes, I'm saying you haven't watched it either, have you?
No,
I'm the last few minutes, which flash back again to the childhood trauma, are so brilliantly done. It's one of the. It is. So I'm saying the word now. A masterpiece. The series.
Episode 2 was traumatic. Is it as traumatic as that last episode?
No, because.
Don't tell us.
Only briefly flashes back to that. Particular thing, the childhood trauma,
yeah,
and the rest of it's some really funny bits. It's really funny as well.
Can't wait.
Because you know his dad's crazy friend, horrible friend. He's in it a lot, and that's really funny. He has to encounter some hippy dippy, crazy women. It's really funny.
It's
an absolute masterpiece. There we are. That's all I wanted to say, Kay. I hope I haven't taken up too much of the time. Let us turn to the tweets
before the meat.
Right.
That was seamless that time.
Yeah.
You have to lay that down as a track.
You even sort of joined in with the little jingle.
I know, a trio. Yeah.
Almost.
Right, Critters, at Critters, says, great podcast this week, guys. I love that, and Boyd, you're going to love this. At Boyd Hilton always begins the title of any TV service with the. So it's the Netflix,
so
the Amazon Prime. You do it all the time, and we kind of got back to at Critters and said, do you know what? It's just an ongoing joke, and you're aware you're doing it, don't you?
But what I thought was interesting was that you did say that to Critters.
Yeah.
That it was not, and didn't Critters tweet it again?
Yeah, I don't know.
Which I thought was interesting. And so I wonder whether Critters saw you or for some reason ignored your reply.
Yeah.
You wanted to show it. And then I thought, well, now I'm going to take the opportunity to
address
carry
yourself,
on the joke.
Yeah.
So I said, yeah, that like the BBC One and the ITV and the Channel 4.
Boyd, can you start introducing us as the Steph and the K? I think I'd enjoy that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
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 That's something to look
into. The Unmissables, the Steph, the K.
Yeah. Why not? Okay.
The John Dan.
Yeah.
All of them.
It's going to work, isn't it?
Yeah.
Also, you have been, which I enjoyed a lot, you have been Twitter bonged a lot by the
pogs. Oh, yeah.
Twitter bong.
It's the new thing. Twitter bong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For your multiple name drops on. What was that about?
What have you been name dropping on the Twitter?
You'd been to some glitzy event.
Oh, yeah. I can't
remember what that was
been
now.
To.
He's been to so many.
Well,
events,
I did John Bishop last week.
Oh, that was
it. Bish.
Was it that?
Did you tell him what I thought about his acting?
No, I bloody well did not. So
and
nice.
That would be useful to him.
He's
James
lovely.
Corden, was that a bong as well? Maybe I'll tweet about that. Anyway, yeah. Oh, and Love Island. Yes, because I know. Oh, yes.
Oh, what?
John Dan has reminded
what
me.
What is it?
What was it?
Because the Doctor, is he still on it, the Doctor?
Yeah,
I'm not watching it.
I haven't watched it.
The Doctor.
I haven't watched it since episode one. But a friend of mine who is a matron in a hospital.
Ooh, matron.
Matron.
She's worked in the HMS. That's what they call them. They still call them matrons. I know. It's so
I believe
ridiculous.
You.
I think there's a whole discussion
I've got a friend that's a matron.
I think there's a whole discussion about actually about whether they that phrase is still like appropriate, that they're
that
trying
they
to give
be
a different way.
But it's fine.
Yeah, it's a high level nurse. It's a top level nurse.
Maybe they
basically.
Should call them like nurse consultants.
High operative.
Anyway, she's been working in the NHS since we were at college. And she works in the same hospital as the Doctor. And not only that, the phrase she used to me was when she pointed out that she knows the Doctor, I taught him everything he knows.
Oh,
yes. That's the ultimate bong.
Yes.
Bong.
So I did announce the fact that I dropped that, and a lot of people wrote.
She is saying that she, the matron, taught him everything he knows
about medical matters.
Yeah, well,
I'm not saying anything
else. Fine.
Yeah.
Hopefully, not love matters because he hasn't got a clue.
She's married to my friend. Yeah.
Right, moving swiftly on. So at Andy Mank says, at Unmissable's pod, after the middle ends, now the American ends with multiple crying faces, definitely worth a mention next Tuesday. Are you watching that?
The Americans?
Yes.
The Americans.
The Americans.
I've always wanted to watch that. That's, whatchamacallit, Kerry Russell.
Absolutely brilliant. Yeah,
it's
true.
I want to get on that. Is that on Prime?
No. It's on... Oh, it might be. It's
I think it is on Prime.
ITV... 3 or 4, I want to say, has been showing it. It started out on ITV. The first series was they put it on Saturday night on ITV. Series one of The Americans. I interviewed Matthew Rhys for it. Matthew Rhys is in it.
Bong,
who I've known for years because he was in a thing with David Walliams.
The time bong.
Years and years and years ago. Anyway, he's a lovely guy, a lovely, brilliant actor, that's all about undercover Russians living in suburbia in America and how then they have family and that the ramifications of that. And it's just finished.
I want to see it.
Yeah, and it is absolutely phenomenal. Now, I have to be honest, I kind of I stopped watching it after about
trailed off
series 3 or 4, and I felt bad, always felt bad. But partly
felt bad for who?
For myself.
Right, okay.
Not for Matthew Rhys or Kerry Russell or anyone else. But I've got to start again because apparently everyone says it just got better and better and better. And by the final
everyone's
season,
talking about it.
Everyone's saying it's one of the
greatest, gonna start watching it.
Greatest things ever on TV. So
what?
Yeah, people are saying that. Yeah.
What?
Like some of the proper American critics, you know, the big, like the New Yorker, Emily Nussbaum. Do you know Emily Nussbaum? She's the best TV critic in the world. New Yorker.
Why is she the best TV critic in the world?
She's a brilliant writer. She's absolutely fantastic. Yeah.
Do you like her more than you like me?
I like her more than like me.
Oh,
good reaction. Anyway, The Americans. Yes, you're absolutely right. Who was it who said that?
Andy Mack.
Yes,
right.
For sure.
Last one. Are you watching Frankie Boyle's New World Order? Says at DMC 1691.
Because a lot of mistakes in these. New World Order.
World
Sorry.
Order. You can't critique people's tweets.
It's
factually incorrect.
It's New World Order.
They're taking the time.
That's a different thing.
Oh my God, I should
have read. Then I should have read it. Boyle's Frankie Word New Order.
Exactly. Yes, I am watching it. I quite like it. Thank you, Boyle. Blocked me on Twitter, interestingly.
Why?
Yeah. Because
there's a lot of gasping today. Sorry about
that. Yeah. It's all coming out now. You didn't even know these things.
What shit have you done now?
Very rarely for me, a few years ago, I wrote a thing in The Observer. You know, The Observer used to have these debates where they'd have a topic. And Frankie Boyle did a joke about...
Yeah.
Was it Katie Price's son?
Katie Price's son. Harvey. And then another joke about that swimmer.
The lovely swimmer and her
nose.
Swimmer's the
nose,
dolphin
yeah.
thing.
The
yes.
thing about... If you look in a spoon.
Rebecca Adlington.
Rebecca Adlington. So he was doing these very
nasty,
distasteful, in quotes, you know, offensive,
unkind.
In quotes, unkind jokes, right? And I debated
I don't
with another
quotes,
journalist.
They are offensive.
I debated with another journalist saying I found his not offensive. I didn't want him to be banned or anything, but I basically said I thought he had gone too far, you know, in terms of taste.
Yeah.
And I thought they were kind of punching down, you know, like for a comedian rather than.
Yeah.
And he blocked me on Twitter. There and then. So as soon as that article came out, which, you know, I put, you know, link to it, he was annoyed. And,
well, he can't take it, can he? What
fair
baby?
Enough. I mean, I'm not having a go at him.
No. That's very childish. If you can't take criticism.
I don't.
Oh, for God's sake.
I think
he's totally
within his
right.
Because, you know, when you tweet someone, I think someone had added his name in. I would never, if I put a link to an article that I've criticised someone in, I would never add them in. I think that's really bad form. And someone else did. That's what happened.
Right.
And you know, you're like, it's almost like telling tales on someone else. Yeah, saying, oh, yeah, by the way, this bloke's written this, said this hot nasty
thing about
you.
It's a big dob.
Basically, you got dobbed in.
I got dobbed in.
And
Frankie
then
Boyle, fully
suffer
within
the consequences.
His right, blocked me. I'm not bothered. But
fair
anyway,
enough.
Funnily enough, I think I am a fan of his. I think he's, and I think now, funnily enough, to say funnily enough, second time in one sentence.
Third time.
He's found a much better place. His, now he's more
did
political.
Did you change him?
No, I'm not saying that at all. He did a terrible sketch on Channel 4 as I watched.
Oh my God, why are you slagging
this,
him off some more?
No, I think God, this is a good
this
show.
This is the mother of all flip-flops.
This is a good show. This suits him. I like the show.
New World Order. Everyone, not New World Order.
And the
Order.
Episode that David Baddiel was on, which was the first episode of this series a couple of weeks ago, has caused a massive stir on Twitter. I mean, I can't even go into that. But David Baddiel, legend, hero, has had to deal with so much shit for what he said on that show.
What did
about
he say?
Jeremy Corbyn anti-Semitism.
Oh, right. Oh, yes.
Sorry.
I have read something about that.
I mean, incredible.
Google it, Pogs. Google
it's
it.
A Google.
And finally to say also on that note, please do not block us, but do send us your tweets. If you've got anything else you want to tell us about, ask questions, anything you want, critiques or void, that's all welcomed. At Unmissables Pod, get in touch.
Who knew that the K would bring up two huge things that
in your life.
About for hours.
Certainly not I.
Certainly not I. She's regretting it now. Let's have some meat. Come on, finally.
Okay. Let's get the sodding meat on.
Right.
Bloody hell. We're starting with Ocean's 8, the major motion picture, Steph. And now, in many ways, I think I wanted us to all see this film together because, let's be clear, for you, it stars Sandra Bullock.
Yeah.
She's very much closely involved with, I think, the getting this film together.
Yeah.
From what I've read. And, you know, kind of making sure it happened.
Yeah.
She's the main lead role, I would say, along the whole array of females in
right.
it.
Right.
And you,
but more importantly,
I don't feel there's
Steph
any
is,
greater fan of Bullock than you. Is that right?
You are obsessed.
I am obsessed with Sandra Bullock. I absolutely love and adore her. I know this is going to sound completely nutso, but I truly believe that Sandra Bullock and I are supposed to be best friends. I used to have a framed photo of her on my desk mm-hmm. holding two dogs.
I can verify
she was holding
that.
Two dogs, but then everyone thought that was a bit weird because I also had this wall. I used to sit by a wall which had a pillar and I used to put just pictures of her up and call it the wall of Bullock. I've had to dismantle those things because I'm 37 and I can't do things like that anymore. But my love
but also
for her...
in this office, we're not allowed to do that kind of thing.
No, we're not allowed to put things
the only thing that stops you from being friends with her...
What is it?
The restraining order. That's it. That's the only thing that I can see.
I deeply, deeply love Sandra Bullock. I don't know what else to say. So thinking about her makes me a bit emotional because I love her so much.
Yeah, and this is the first... This is a big Sandy B event, Ocean's 8. So... I'm going to turn to you to explain what the H is going on in this film.
Okay, so basically, Sandra Bullock is Debbie Ocean, who is the sister of Danny Ocean, our lovely, lovely George Clooney, okay? We join her as she is being released from prison. I'm not going to say why she's been in prison because I don't want to give anything away. But she's come out of prison. She's committed a crime. And she goes to meet up with her criminal partner, played by Kate Blanchett, Lou, played by Kate Blanchett. And she says, I, for 5 years, have been thinking of this crime that I want to commit. And are you in? And basically, the crime, I'm not giving anything away, the crime is to go to the Met Ball, the very fancy ball that happens every year, which is put on by Vogue and the Metropolitan Museum of Arts, and steal some jewels. But in order to do that, they have to kind of get a gang together, and that's how the gang of people, including Rihanna, Anne Hathaway,
Helena Bonham Carter,
Mindy Kaling, how they are all brought together.
Correct. You summed it up.
That was a great nutshell.
Pick it up some. Mm. Yeah. Now, lots of questions.
Yeah.
From this film. Because, I mean, I've just written an article for Heat Magazine, which will be coming out next Tuesday.
Yep.
Mm. About the whole female reboot issue.
Oh, issue.
It is an issue in the sense that Ghostbusters was a big, very, very high profile reboot of Ghostbusters with four main women in the main roles. And it got a lot of shit from crazy online trolls who were, you know, get annoyed and offended by identity politics, by the idea that, you know, these great kind of classic films should be remade with women. Why are they doing that? So those people are obviously morons.
Mm.
And
yeah,
we should not even
of course.
Give them any
Let's
time
count
of day.
Them.
But I think there is an interesting phenomenon because I was disappointed with that film, Ghostbusters.
Were you? Oh,
yeah,
I liked it.
I thought it was fun. but somehow lacked the magic. I don't know. And it's almost like it just didn't quite work for me.
It didn't have enough Bill Murray in it. That was the problem.
No, not at all. I felt with that film that it didn't really use its brilliant talent, those female stars, well enough. Like, I didn't think it gave them enough. Now, Ocean's 8 is out, the next in this line, and it is a thing. It is like a phenomenon. Mm-hmm. It's a trend. Yeah. So there's more one. There's Dirty Rotten Scoundrels coming up, which I've written about, which is also going to be remade.
Lord of the Flies.
Lord of the Flies with girls rather than boys. So this is a thing that's happening. Now, with Ocean's 8, I've come cards on the date table. I was disappointed. And I think even more so than Ghostbusters, you've got these brilliantly talented, funny women. Bullock, Blanchett, Hathaway, Bonham Carter, Rihanna, Kaling, particularly Kaling, Mindy Kaling. Oh my God, she's so wasted.
Dud role.
Awkwafina, Sarah Paulson. But don't give them funny stuff to do and say. So it's a caper. It's like Ocean's 11.
Without the fun.
Mm. And I just feel like Gary Ross, the director, who also, you know, has directed some decent films and some okay films, and his co-scriptwriter, who wrote it with another woman, I just don't think they've given them enough funny stuff to do. And that really annoys me because now people are going to go, oh, the women, it's not as good as the men. It's not that. It's just in this particular one, it's not the script. It feels like it's like a first draft.
I think, right, and as, look, I've stated my in-depth love for Sandra Bullock, okay? So many would say that for me, she can do no wrong. And that is true, except for in this film.
Yeah, right.
Because she is so brilliant and I could not agree with you more. But actually, I think it goes deeper than saying that these women are wasted, which is such a disappointment because they are all so brilliant. It's like an embarrassment of riches with all of these actresses. And none of them have good enough lines for their caliber of actress. But more than that, actually, I have a real issue with the plot. I have a real issue with all of these women. And the one thing they want is a fancy diamond necklace, and they have to go to where all these people are dressed, and all that they care
and
about
seeking
is getting
revenge on a man.
On a man. I have a real issue.
By Richard Armitage.
I have a real issue with that because actually, it's like, I love female reboots, I'm all for them. What I'm not for is like, I don't know where this is like. I find it a little bit insulting. Like, let's all get dressed up. Mm. Let's go and steal a diamond necklace because that boyfriend really upset me and I'm going to, you know, it's like, why didn't they, I don't know. Yeah, it's just
weird,
not cool enough.
Yeah.
Like for these women who are like smart, funny, brilliant women, it's just, I really didn't like the setting. I mean, it plays like an advert for Vogue and the Kardashians. And
there's a lot of cameos.
I think everybody has just like, this is like, you think all of those people are just going to be like, oh my God, I'm in that film. Like you can see the Kardashians going, let's come around to mine to watch the bit that I'm on. And like Hailey Baldwin and people that know, like people do not go to watch the Sandra Bullock films to see these type of cameos. Mm. I really didn't like it. And this is honestly the only Sandra Bullock film. And I have to say, I think she's good in it, but she's not my Sandy.
You know what? I actually thought, her character was just nothing.
That's what I mean, but she didn't have it. They didn't have the material.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with everything Steph said. There wasn't enough jeopardy, and it wasn't funny enough. But there's not enough jeopardy, like in the other Ocean's films. There's a jeopardy. You're like, oh God, there's so many things that could go wrong. They're gonna get caught. You're feeling tense.
Yeah.
There's nothing tense about this. It's almost like a kind of a guide on how to rob the Met Gala. Like, it's all just instructions.
But
it's
also, didn't you think with the other Ocean's films, there's always in every Ocean's film, there's an amazing twist that is kept from the audience, that is completely kept from the audience. Yeah. Now, their attempt to do that in this film is utterly crap. I mean, it is rubbish.
Sarah Paulson, I think, is great. I loved her in it. But overall, I'm not really into female reboots because I just think, like, I don't feel we need them. I think, why don't we make original
I mean, that's, again, a very good point.
For these amazing actresses. Why do we have to remake them?
The irony of this being that the absolute best, the thing that makes this film funny, the only thing that's funny in this film is James Corden.
Yeah.
He's the only thing that's funny in this film.
Yeah, I said that. I tweeted last week.
He's the best thing in this film, and he's the only thing that's funny in it.
James Corden.
He sort of rescues the third act.
James Corden gets so much shit from British people on social media who now routinely slag him off for ludicrous reasons because, you know, it's like all he's done is gone to America, become incredibly successful.
Yeah.
And people hate him for it. It's the classic,
ridiculous.
It's a cliche. Yeah, it's a cliche to a poppy syndrome, but it's absolutely true, particularly in his case. It's like he's, you know, done committed some horrendous crime.
Well, he's left us, hasn't he? He's left us. He thinks he's better than us.
He once said something cocky in a BAFTA speech, you know, like ever since then people have been like, oh, he's awful. Mm. No. Read my interview with him in next week's Heat.
World exclusive.
He is great in it, and you know why? Because he's funny, and he's fine. And again, I feel like either he was allowed to improvise a bit, or almost punch up his own dialogue because it's funny and everyone else is.
Boyd, he was definitely allowed to improvise because there's a line in it about Arsenal, yeah, so he was definitely allowed to improvise.
There was a line about Arsenal, and he's of course a huge West Ham fan. It must have been.
He is incredibly funny in this, but what? Yeah. Sorry, state of affairs. If the funniest thing in a female reboot is Corden,
right? Shocking, right? Exactly. He just brings a freshness to it, doesn't he? And a kind of I can't. Go on enough about. I can go on enough about. I apologise in advance. I'm kind of angry because I saw someone on Twitter the other day who hasn't seen the film yet posting a picture of Cate Blanchett and Sandra Bullock. There's a big scene where they're talking. You know, they're talking kind of almost on a beach somewhere in New Jersey or something. And they look great. They look kind of you know, cool.
Aesthetically, this is great.
Aesthetically amazing.
If you like good outfits, this is the film for you.
And this person said, this woman said, oh, you know, this is what I want. I want to, this is a, yeah. This, and I'm like, you have to wait to see the film.
This is not what you want.
Both of those characters are nothing. There's nothing to, now I can't remember.
Rihanna's great. I liked her a lot.
What were those characters about? One final thing I'm going to say is that if you watch, you know, there's an interview that Sarah Paulson and Cate Blanchett did on the Today Show in America. Did I send you the link?
Yeah.
Did you watch it?
No.
Oh my God. It's so funny. Because Charles Gantt reviewed it for us, and I was talking, emailing each other about it, and he said, well, Cate Blanchett just can't do comedy anyway. She's brilliantly funny in this Today Show interview, her and Sarah Paulson just making fun of each other, merciless fun of each other.
We'll tweet it from the Admissibles podcast.
Thank you. That 10-minute clip
is better than this film.
Is better than 2 hours.
It's such a waste. It's so disappointing.
Having said that, an interesting fact for you guys, the opening weekend, this version beat the male version. So people are obviously loving it.
But they're loving. They're going to it with it. They're going to with it. That's what actually upsets me more, because they're going to it. They're going to it for all the right reasons, and it's disappointing.
Yeah. It's a D recommend from you.
Yeah, maybe we're being too harsh. I mean, you know, I enjoyed it while it was on.
It's not.
Don't
good,
doubt
boys.
Yourself.
No, I did enjoy it while it was on. But now I literally can barely remember a thing about it apart from James Corden. How many stars are you giving it, Kay?
3 stars. Lukewarm.
Steph.
3.
It's a 3 for me. Yes, you know, 3 is a recommendation, let me remind you.
Sorry, Sandy.
Ocean's 8 is in cinemas next Monday, weirdly, because most films come out on a Friday or, you know. But yes, on the Monday, 18th of June. Judge for yourselves, as I often say on this podcast. Atlanta, Robin Season, is the second series of the... I'm going to call it comedy, but very loosely comedy, created by and starring and written by, sometimes directed by, Donald Glover of Childish Gambino and The Best Thing About Solo, the film, Han Solo film fame. Yes, definitely.
Totally.
Steph's eating a biscuit. She can't say anything, but I just wanted to back up from that. Kay's eating a biscuit as well. There's illicit biscuit eating going on.
Sorry, I finished now.
I'm surrounded by biscuit.
It was a yellow one with the pink lines, which is the best one.
In Atlanta, now season one is showing currently as we speak on BBC Two on a Sunday night at 10 o'clock. It was on Fox last year, so the Fox show in the UK debuted it. Now, the first season is on BBC Two, if you haven't got access to Fox on your Sky or whatever. Now, Fox is about to show the second season, which is what we've watched.
I can confirm it's all on BBC because it's been on my things to watch list. So I gobbled it up in one go. It's on iPlayer.
Weirdly, really weirdly, I think, they're showing it on Fox this coming Sunday at 10 o'clock at the same time as BBC Two is showing
what's the point?
Where they're up to in season one. How bizarre is that?
That's
so
really
literally
bizarre.
Atlanta's clashing with itself on BBC Two
that
and
is
Fox
ludicrous.
On Sunday. Absolutely ludicrous. Anyway, Donald Glover plays Erd Marks, who is a kind of homeless, really, and it certainly was at the beginning of season one. He is back again in season two. Homeless, kind of trying, it has to rely on friends of where to sleep. And partly that's how he ended up being the manager of his cousin, who's a rapper, played by Brian Tyree Henry. And Brian Tyree Henry's best mate is Darius, who is his like right-hand man and kind of visionary helper and helping him out creatively. He's very funny.
Last scene in The Get Out.
Yes, that's in The Get Out. And Earn's best friend is Van, played by Zazie Beetz, who's also the mother of his daughter. And it's kind of difficult to describe the tone of it. I would say, so it's like, you think, oh, it's a half-hour comedy, but it's the most loose kind of, they do all kinds of bold, daring, incredible things. In season one, there was a whole episode that was done as a, like, the rapper had to apologise for making transphobic comments, and it was all done as if it was, you know, we were watching him apologising on television.
That was a really weird episode.
I quite
really
like that one.
Yeah, it was great. It was brilliant.
Narratively, it's all over the place.
Narratively, it's daring. I'm using the daring word.
Bold usually goes with that. Okay.
So season two picks up. It opens with a robbery of a kind of fast food store, like a southern fast food store called Mrs. Winner's, by two teenagers who, by the way, completely unconnected to the main characters, and we don't really know why, you know, that we're even watching it. But it starts off, which shows how kind of normal they are when they're just chatting away. And then next minute, you know, they're trying to do an armed robbery, and it gets quite violent.
Mm-hmm. Very
and
violent.
Not really funny at all, just completely dramatic and brilliantly directed, I thought, that bit. Then Ernie's evicted from his storage facility space. He visits Alfred, who's under house arrest, and Darius, who's kind of, they're at odds with each other. You don't know why. He keeps asking them, why aren't you talking to each other?
And they won't
tell him. There's an issue. They won't tell him, which is really funny.
They've had a fight.
They keep saying, I don't want to talk about it,
Domestic.
And then they visit Ern's uncle, Willie, to defuse a domestic disturbance. And Uncle Willie keeps going on about how he's got an alligator.
Played by Cat Williams, the great comedian.
Yes. And he keeps going on about he's got an alligator in his house. Yeah. And you're like, oh, really? And everyone doesn't know.
He's got it in his bathroom.
He's
just a bit like,
anything is,
you know,
I don't know what's going on. And it kind of ends with a kind of, the police arrive and there's a kind of big confrontation. I won't say any more than that.
Yeah.
For me, I've described extensively what the show is about. This is one of the best shows around at the moment. It's just, it's so original.
Yeah.
The tone of it, it's like, he deals with big, big issues. It's basically, it's all about, really, it's all about people, you know, dealing with their lot in life in Atlanta, black people, and the fact that it's really hard. Life is really, really tough. And institutionally, the whole society is kind of keeping them down. And can you work, can you, you know, if you become a rapper, even, can you go beyond that? Can you use your creativity? Can you?
Often the answer is no.
And he's and I think his no accident is back in season two. It begins homeless again and having to kind of catch off his friends and say, can I stay here? And they're like, no. And it's, there's a kind of melancholic undercurrent to it, which is really sad. Incredibly realistic and yet funny and unpredictable at the same time. Steph,
I absolutely love this. It is, like you say, original and funny. And probably you don't know this, but my husband lived in Atlanta for a year when he was trying to play, get back into football in America. And he basically was homeless and sofa surfed for the whole year, living on
people's... Is he Donald Glover?
He is Childish Gambino. And he loves this because he's like, this is exactly what Atlanta is like. I mean, he's not a rapper, but he's like, this is is exactly what it's like in Atlanta.
Has he tried to rap?
He hasn't tried to rap. Maybe I should give anything a go. But yeah, so he really loves it. I mean, it's just, I feel like Donald Glover is such a genius. And like you say, it's got so much heart, this, as well, because you kind of, you fall in love with the characters just because they are so real. They're complete, like, they're imperfect, completely flawed characters, but you kind of feel like they're trying their best. Look, this, like, as you said, this is their lot. They're trying to kind of get out of whatever situation they're in. And I absolutely love the relationship between Ern and Van. I love their relationship so much, and their daughter, because he's got this gorgeous little girl, and I just love their whole, everyone's trying to make their life better and they do it in a hilarious way, but which is also very realistic. It's wonderful. It's a brilliant show.
I think he's a voice of his generation, isn't he? I think Donald Glover is. I think he is.
In a very under.
Yeah, I think he is.
I just think it's the voice of generation. What?
I agree. I honestly, and I just, he's so mesmerizing that when he's on the screen, that's what all I can focus on. Like, it doesn't matter what anyone else is doing.
He draws you in, doesn't
he? Yeah, there's something about him, and it's so authentic that I think this is a must watch for everyone.
It also shows how you get involved in crime, not you, one. In that world of Atlanta.
Very easy.
That they kind of get involved. And I think it is, apparently, I haven't seen the rest of season two yet, but it's called Robin Season. And it's because it's called Robin Season because it's all about how in the build up to Christmas, apparently, this does happen. Suddenly there are loads more robberies because people get increasingly desperate to have to pay for Christmas and they want to have some kind of. So it literally are robberies throughout. Opens with a robbery and there are more coming up, apparently. And this season is largely about how, you know, you can good people end up being criminals, and that what happens to them.
They're all just trying to survive.
Yes. Yeah. Don't you think what's so brilliant is every single person in this, every role is brilliantly executed.
Yeah.
There are no kind of bit player duds in this. Everyone plays their part perfectly, and it seems like the script is so like it's so tight. Do you know what I mean? Even though it doesn't seem like there's any like.
Fat.
I don't know. Yeah, there's no fat. Yeah. It's just brilliant.
Very lean.
It's absolutely brilliant.
Tight and lean.
I enjoy the surreal moments a lot.
Yes. No fat on this meat.
No, it's wonderful.
It's tight, lean meat.
You must all watch it.
How many stars, Stephanie Seeler?
5 stars.
Yeah, I'm giving it 5 too.
I'm going to give it 5 as well.
It's a lot of agreement going on today.
Atlanta Robin Season, as it's officially called, is on the Fox Channel. On Sunday the 17th of June, I'm being very dramatic. Sunday the 17th of June, 10 p.m. Yes, the same time as season one is on BBC Two.
The BBOC.
Crazy, crazy world. And finally, in possibly extremely sharp contrast, starting on BBC Two, next Wednesday the 20th of June at 10 o'clock, Mortimer and Whitehouse Gone Fishing. Not Robin.
No, they're not Robin.
It's fishing season.
Well, they're Robin the Rivers of the Fish. But, Paul Whitehouse and Bob Mortimer, long-term friends, comedians, as a lot of you will know. Also, you wouldn't know, maybe, that they've both had heart disease. Now, I don't say that in a flip way. I'm not just going through
it
their medical...
It sounded flip.
It sounded flip. That's just my voice. Mm-hmm. I'm not going through their medical records. What is that every episode... Well, the beginning of the episode, they talk about it. They talk about the fact that they've both had heart disease, stents, bypasses, stuff like that. And this show is... I mean... The premise is they're just going around the country fishing because Paul is an experienced fisherman and Bob isn't. He's a complete novice. So it's essentially them going around, Paul trying to teach Bob to fish while also, you know, they have a bit of a laugh, they do impressions, they reminisce about the old times. And they also talk about the more serious stuff like their health issues and how they've dealt with it and stuff like that. This sounds like when I first read this and Boyd said, oh, let's do this, I was like, what? A fishing program? Are you joking?
It sounded he wasn't.
No, he wasn't. Yeah, he wasn't joking.
I partly did it because I wanted to see what Steph would react. Yeah.
Well, I think I'm going to surprise you.
Okay.
So anyway, this first episode, they go to Norfolk and they're fishing for tench, which I didn't even know was a type of fish.
Big old fish.
It's a big old fish, a lucifer fish.
Did you know what tench was before you watched it?
Well, I knew it was a fish. I didn't know
did
what...
You? Yeah, did you? Did you? Well, I'm impressed with your fish knowledge.
Yeah.
Hmm. And yeah, so they go to a brewery and they sleep in yurts, et cetera, et cetera. I thought I'd hate this, but actually, do you know what? I really liked it. I thought it was really nice. And actually, it's nice to see them reminiscing and talking about the old times, but also, you know, finding out what's going on with them at the moment. And that I thought all the stuff they're talking about, their illnesses, was actually very sweet. And, you know, how they were reassuring each other and giving each other support was actually a nice thing to see. And their impressions... His impression of, like, Robert De Niro was hilarious.
Hilarious. Yeah. Of course, Vic and Bob are known as the double act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And really, Paul Whitehouse and Harry Enfield were the double act. So this is the two of them coming together.
So are Vic and Harry going to get together?
Maybe. Ooh, maybe they could do, like, what's it, like fishing?
Not Gone Fishing?
Not Gone Fishing. Yeah. Hanging around. Anyway, what did you feel about seeing these two middle-aged white blokes fishing and getting a big television series? Did you resent that as a thought you might?
Or No.
Okay.
Now, I'm not sure whether you're aware of this, Boyd, but I have recently become certified in kayaking. I've recently taken up kayaking, and I did my BC1, British Canoeing, 1 star. And so I've been spending a lot of time on the British waterways. So for me, this is actually a bit of a dream show because I am a big, big appreciator of the British waterways. I loved it. I thought it was wonderful. I see a lot of people fishing and they always look really happy. I love Bob. I love Paul. I like hearing them talk. It was very moving. I also
and
like
the waterways.
Fish.
You started saying everything like
I'm very happy that they put the fish back.
Yeah, I thought that was
one
good.
Of the things I most enjoyed is that clearly Paul Whitehouse takes his fishing incredibly seriously, and Bob doesn't because he's not very good at it. I also really like this. So in this episode, they go into luxury yurt.
Yeah.
Which I enjoyed seeing the inside of.
Where the Robert De Niro impression occurs.
Yes. Yeah. Which was very nice. I liked all of it. I thought it was lovely. And yeah, I've got no bad things to say about it. And I'm very happy that they've got the series together because they are wonderful.
And in case you're worried about like the health stuff, it isn't like major, major series. Because like, one point, Bob's talking about it and Paul's just taking the absolute piss out of him.
It's funny. It's brilliant. Did you hear the episode of the Adam Buxton podcast where Bob Mortimer's on?
No, absolutely not, Boyd.
It's an absolute classic. So I urge you to listen to that because it's effing brilliant. And it was they did that. I think he just started filming this series. So he asked him, what have you got coming up? And Bob Mortimer tells him about this series. He's like, I've got a series coming up. And he's like, I'm going fishing with Paul Whitehouse.
It sounds like a joke.
Yeah. And he goes, what do you mean? And it kind of goes. I mean, this is me. I didn't re-listen to it to remember, but my memory of it is that Bob Mortimer goes, yeah, that's it. Just us going. We just go fishing. And he goes, what? And you've got a whole series? Goes, yeah, 6-part series, BBC Two, us. And it is one of those brilliant things. It's only on British TV would you get these two guys who they are icons to me of British comedy.
Fishing's a big deal, though.
They're just hanging out, aren't they? I mean, the fishing is kind of incidental, and yet it does bring it.
It's the glue.
It's a travel show as well.
Yeah, exactly. They move around. They go to the brewery. They have beer. Yeah. But it's just these two brilliantly likeable, funny, honest, candid. Bob Mortimer is an absolute legend.
Isn't he so sweet?
He's really funny as well. And I love one of the things he does, which he does all the time, whether he's on that podcast with Adam Buxton, whether he's on Would I Lie to You. He's had the best episodes of Would I Lie to You, the ones with him, where he has these lengthy stories, which are ludicrous. And by the way, spoiler alert, they always turn out to be true.
Really?
Yeah, he can. I remember his Would I Lie to You's. He can get an apple and he can pull it apart so that it's perfectly cut down the middle.
No, he can't.
No. See, it's incredible.
Have you actually seen? Does he do it on the show?
Yes, he does it. He proves it. He pulls it. We
need to send a link to that.
It's been pre-cut.
No, it's not. No. Okay, it's not CGI.
But how does he?
You're
do
absolutely
that?
Joker. He's pre-cut it and he's fooled you.
Is it like a way you
you're
hold
an apple
it?
Fool.
It's the way
you
hold it.
Is it one of those things where you hold something in a certain position?
Yeah, he does it brilliantly. It's incredible.
Do you know what? There's maths involved.
There's another one where he talks about he used to be a hairdresser and he cut this guy's hair. And it's true, his whole family of hairdressers, they all cut each other's hair. He's so he's eccentric, he's incredible. But what I was saying was, he always says people's first name to them all the time. You know, it's in the show. He uses people's first name. So he says, Paul. Are you right, Paul? Paul.
It's very likable.
Pretty much at the end of every other sentence in the show, he says, Paul. Yeah, thanks, Paul. Yeah, where are we going to go and sleep in that yurt, Paul? And he does it all the time in everything he's ever done. I've met him, you know, a few times. Thank you. It says your name to you, repeated, which is the true sign of an absolute legend.
I'm definitely going to watch the next episode.
Yeah, same. I'll go watch all six.
I think it's going to be a runaway hit.
It's going to be a massive phenomenon.
Yeah. It's going to be the new train rides. You know that BBC Two, yes. Everyone always go on the trains. Now it's going to be the fish.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. It feels like a BBC Four thing, but thank God it's on, you know, bigger BBC Two.
Don't cop on about it, guys.
Oh. Thank you.
Thank you. We've been waiting all time.
Well done.
There's nothing cod about this series. Thank God it's on, in fact.
Ooh.
Mortimer Whitehouse, Gone Fishing, BBC Two, Wednesday 20th of June, 10 p.m. It's 5 stars for me.
It's 5 stars from me.
Oh, come on, guys. It is about bloody fishing. It's 4 stars. No. Let's be realistic. No.
It's heartwarming. It's nice.
Heartwarming.
Heartwarming.
Now then, finally, yes, the epic podcast is coming to an end. What time is it?
It's question time.
Now, Steph, actually, you explain, Boyd, sorry.
Well,
on the list, you might get a bit discombobulated because it does say, what's your favourite fish/fish film/fish TV or something.
I'll read you what it says. It says, part 4, question time. What's your favourite fish or fish-related TV/film?
Yeah, there's been a last-minute change, sorry.
I've got my answer.
I mean, you know, Kay, it's up to Kay.
Sorry.
Kay's the queen.
Has there been an on-air change?
If it's going to take you 10 seconds to say the answer, you can say that now before we go on the real one.
It is A Fish Called Wonder, starring the brilliant Michael Palin, Jamie Lee Curtis and Kevin Kline.
That's a good answer. Mine was going to be Jaws. But anyway, because the reason why we're changing this is because one of our pogs, Gertrude Perkins, has actually suggested a question, so I felt we should go with that.
Perky. We've got to go with it.
Yeah.
So she says, after that amazing last episode of A Very English Scandal, what's your favourite political drama /TV/film/book/thing?
House of Cards, Gertie. House of Cards. I'm on it today.
Mine's obviously The West Wing.
Was it political drama or political thriller? Sorry, was it political drama? Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I mean, mine is kind of The West Wing as
I
well.
No, you can't copycat. Have it the same. You can have
but what I will say is State of Play, which was a brilliant BBC British drama in 2003 and starred John Sim. Get this for a cast. John Sim, James McAvoy, David Morrissey, Bill Nighy, Kelly MacDonald, Phil Glenister, Mark Warren. It was a brilliant political thriller. And it was also turned into a Hollywood film, which wasn't very good. It was okay, the Hollywood film. But that was one of the absolutely brilliant, great
British TV drama.
Written by Paul Abbott. I'm sure it'll be in there somewhere. DVD,
Do you like that better than House of Cards? You love House of Cards.
Oh, I like it better than House of Cards. Yeah. Mm. I like House of Cards, but State of Play was genius.
Thanks, Gertie, for the question.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Perky. And if you have any questions you want us to answer, like for question time or just generally, do get in touch at
If you'd like to know more about kayaking or
I want to come
dogs.
And it could be kayak.
Monogamy.
Kayaking, monogamy.
Yeah.
Anything.
Yeah.
Sherlock, Doctor Who. I hadn't mentioned it. I had to mention it.
Cool. Anyway, I think it's been a very enjoyable podcast. Thanks very much. And just trying to wrap it
up. Even if you do say so yourself.
Even if you do say so yourself. It's a goodbye from me.
It's a goodbye from me.
It's a goodbye from me.